So I've been telling you guys about mirror symmetry, and last time I got partway into the case of mirror symmetry for hypercalor manifolds. So I want to make a couple points about what I said last time. So when we add a hypercalor manifold, in the compact case, the natural parameter space for metrics on a hypercalor manifold, you could call it a moduli space if you want, the natural parameter space of metrics looked like the space of positive three planes in the second cohomology. So it was a symmetric space based on some vector space of signature 3, comma k minus 3. And then it had to be mutted out by some appropriate discrete group. And really, in such a situation, the natural parameters come in triples. So you can kind of think of coordinates on this space coming in triples, corresponding to these three directions. In fact, this is a real Grassmannian. So the real dimension of this guy is 3 times k minus 3. And so you have k minus 3 triples of coordinates in some natural way. And then when we enhance this to the kind of string theory moduli space, so a moduli space for metric plus B field, then, and I think I wrote it wrong last time, the dimension goes up to k plus 2. So it's 004 k minus 2 mod 04 cross 0 k minus 2 mod some new gamma. And this time the thing comes in quadruples instead of triples. And so again, we can think of the natural coordinates as kind of coming in with four real components each. And this is exactly the same phenomenon that we saw in Gukov's lecture yesterday, where he described C2 mod Z2 and its blow-ups by a kind of hypercalor quotient construction, so that the parameter space for the set of hypercalor metrics on this space, and this is really Kronheimer's construction, the parameter space, well, you have, so it's being expressed as a hypercalor quotient by U1, and there are the three hypercalor moment maps, or the three moment maps, if you like. Namely, you look at the three different complex structures underlying the hypercalor structure, and you have a moment map for each of them, thinking of the thing as a Kähler space with respect to that particular metric. So you had three moment maps that sort of mapped us to R3, or maybe, anyway, sort of maps us to R3. That's this the local analog of this parameter space for metrics. And when you included the B field provides a fourth coordinate, and it gives a hypercalor structure to the parameter space. Now, sometimes this construction actually turns the parameter space into some quaternionic Kähler manifold, but in this particular local case, it's a hyperkähler manifold. So anyway, I wanted to make that that point about the structure. The ALE space can always be written as hyperkähler quotients. There's a version, I'm not sure if one interprets this as a version of Kronheimer's construction or Kronheimer's construction in the hyperkähler. I think it's for the base to be, the base, with the B field, I'm pretty sure that's correct, that the base is hyperkähler with the B field. That's right. So one has in mind here some natural metric associated with the moduli problem, and the question is whether that's a hypercalib metric. And my recollection is that sometimes you get what's naturally a quaternionic Kalor metric instead of a hypercalib metric from this construction. Yeah, this is something like special geometry. So I'm a little worried about cases where it's like half compact and half non-compact, where you might have gravity couple in some directions but not others, and I'm not sure what structure I get in that case. But this was exactly what I had in the back of my mind when I was making the comment. But yeah, okay. I mean, the real question is whether gravity has decoupled fully in the story. Okay, so the mirror symmetry statement in string theory per se, or in conformal field theory per se, is a statement, as I described last time, that operates naturally on a space like this, where you have one of these symmetric spaces for an orthogonal group, either with an additional self-identification, mirror transformation in question happens to take spaces of this type to other spaces of this type, but possibly with a change in parameters, or in some cases to a different space. So it may be that there are two different kinds of maybe I should just decorate this with some hat or something like that. Two different kinds of space. But often, this kind of identification has a non-obvious effect on the original moduli space itself. Namely, you can do something that looks like a mirror transformation here, which typically involves some kind of labeling of cohomologies to lift to this symmetric space to understand the effect. And then, over on this side, you can now do one of the transformations in gamma tilde hat over here, and then go backwards under the mirror map, and you find that you've enlarged the group over here. So this very same phenomenon happens in the analysis of the moduli spaces that are relevant in the S-duality story, this GL twist of N equal 4 theories, right? Because the S-duality doesn't really map the moduli space for G to the moduli space for the Langlands dual group. I mean, it maps from one to the other, and it maps tau over here to minus 1 over tau over there, or minus 1 over n tau over there, depending on the group. But, of course, you can now do a translational shift over here and then come backwards, and you find some group, maybe not all of SL2Z, but some interesting large group acting on the universal cover of the moduli space over here, which convinces you that the moduli space for LG-twisted theories, in this case, had some large symmetry group as well. And that same phenomenon is happening here. Well, on the other hand, we've been talking about the implication of mirror symmetry for derived categories. And the derived category part of mirror symmetry, so the homological mirror symmetry, as proposed by Koncevich, and then realized through derived categories of D brains of various kinds, that homological mirror symmetry is about twisted two-dimensional theories, not physical two-dimensional theories. And the reason is something that was explained in Paul Aspinwall's lectures, but maybe I'll say it again. Namely, if you look at physical D-brains in the physical theory, in other words, actual boundary conditions that you might impose on the superconformal field theory, not on the twisted one, then the full D-brain category, either the bounded-derived category of coherent sheaves or the Foucaille category, in the case of the two different kinds of brains, respectively, those categories are larger than we actually need to describe the physical D-brain conditions. Physical D-brain conditions typically form some subcategory, probably an abelian subcategory of these guys. But the one of the great advantages of the derived categorical constructions is that in the case of twisted theories, where you would like to be able to sort of simultaneously discuss all the different phases of the physical theory at different values of moduli, you can have this one framework, the bounded derived category of coherent sheaves, or the Foucaille category, the derived Foucaille category, triangulated Foucaille category, whatever you want to call it, which will contain the relevant objects. I'm referring to stability. Sorry. So when I talked about physical brains, I should have said supersymmetric brain. I mean, BPS brains is the ones I was really talking about. And I completely agree that less supersymmetry, all the way down to none, enlarges the category in an important way. It enlarges it in ways that make it more difficult to study using known mathematical techniques. Let's put it that way. Not impossible, as you know, but more difficult. Okay, so homological mirror symmetry, this equivalence of categories, is about twisted two-dimensional theories, and that's great for the application that we've been discussing this week, because we're starting out with a four-dimensional physical theory, which we twist to begin with in four dimensions, and it produces in a natural way twisted theories down in two dimensions from the twisted four-dimensional theory. So we'd like to understand how the twists work in these cases of hyperkähler manifolds. So twisting the n equal 4 comma 4 theories, well, as I mentioned, both the mirror symmetry effect and one can think of the various topological twists are related to choosing a complex structure. In fact, as Anton mentioned in his first lecture, when you're twisting 4 comma 4 theories, there's a choice of two complex structures, essentially one for the left and one for the right. And there are various conditions. There are various conditions which relate them. Those conditions, in the case of an n equal 2 comma 2 theory, only have the two familiar solutions that give the A and the B twist. So there's the standard A twist and B twist, but then there are also others. Now, I don't actually know if anybody has systematically written down what all the possibilities are in a sort of closed form. There's a formulation involving choices of two complex structures and some conditions that you place on them. But I'm not aware of, Sergey, do you know if anybody has sort of systematically worked out all the twists? Right. Yeah, okay. Anyway, we're going to focus mainly on this case, but there's some interesting stories, some of which occur in the work of Kapustin and Witten when they talk about, and subsequent work of others when they talk about cases where there are brains other than the standard A brains and B brains. But let me talk about the main cases of A brains and B brains. And to do so, we must choose a complex structure. In order to be able to have this discussion. So what does it mean to choose a complex structure? Well, as has been mentioned a number of times, a hyperkähler manifold naturally has three complex structures with ij equals k. That's one way of writing down the structure. There are corresponding Kähler forms, omega I, omega j, and omega k, for these three complex structures. And in the compact case, I can think of those as giving a basis of the chosen positive three-plane in H2 of X. So in fact, it's an orthogonal basis, an orthonormal basis. If you normalize things to have volume 1, it's an orthonormal basis of the chosen positive three-plane. And of course, linear combinations of these things are allowed. Real linear combinations are allowed. There aren't just three complex structures. There's a whole S2 full of complex structures, which is given by the possible orthonormal bases in that space. So the natural parameter space for a hyperkähler manifold with a chosen complex structure. So this is hyperkähler plus complex mapping to the parameter space, and this is plus B field, of course, mapping down to hyperkähler. That's some kind of two-sphere bundle over the hyperkähler space. And this one is the one that's closely related to the way that algebraic geometers have typically studied hyperkähler manifolds. So algebraic geometers take the primitive second cohomology for a complex hyperkähler manifold, which should be the orthogonal complement of the Kähler class in H2XR. And then they decompose that primitive cohomology into H20 plus H11 primitive plus H02. And they study the variation of Hodge structure, where they study the families of Hodge structures given in this way. So the advantage is that if you've restricted to the primitive class, then the signature on the primitive space, the signature on that space is 2 comma k minus 3, and the positive part of the signature is being completely occupied by this H20 plus H02 space, and that means that the natural space for the Hodge structures is exactly this space O2 k minus 3 mod O2 cross OK minus 3. That's Hodge structures plus a basis of H2 primitive. So that's great because we can now kind of identify, so under nice circumstances, particularly this holds in the K3 case, we can completely identify the moduli space with an appropriate quotient of this symmetric space. And we do that exactly by the trick of calculating periods of the holomorphic 2 form on a basis for the primitive cohomology. Of course, one also needs to worry about what happened to the Kähler class. But the Kähler class is allowed to take any value in, it's allowed to take values in an appropriate cone inside of all of H2. And there's also the B field, which takes values in H2X R mod Z. So the entire moduli space that I called up there, hyperkähler plus complex, fibers over this Hodge moduli space. And the fibers are these complexified Kähler cones. And if you don't know about mirror symmetry, this splits as a product. It's a product on the cover. There is a non-trivial bundle structure going on here. Well, if I now ask what happens if when I twist with respect to this particular complex structure, so if I fix the complex structure and perform the A or B twists, then I'm restricted on the one hand to Lagrangian cycles with respect to this complex structure, or holomorphic cycles with respect to this complex structure. And to be holomorphic means that the real part of alpha and the imaginary part of alpha was the holomorphic two form with respect to the complex structure, both vanish on the holomorphic cycle. So going back to IJK notation, if my omega is omega I, then the orthogonal guys, I can choose the alpha so that real alpha becomes omega J and imaginary alpha becomes omega K. So this is really saying omega J perp intersected omega K perp. Though that describes the cohomology classes that might possibly be holomorphic cycles. And if I take integer classes which satisfy that particular condition, I get the set of possible classes I could have as potentially carrying the right charges for topologically twisted brains. Again, in the K3 case, we have nice results, which tell us that all we then subsequently need is to kind of take the class gamma and intersect it, evaluate it on, I guess what I want to do is take the integral over gamma of omega I. And if that's positive, then that implies that gamma is actually the cohomology class of some algebraic cycle. And I've just presented this essentially for the classes in H2, but one can also kind of add on to this in the K3 case an H0 and an H4 and extend this to a total Chern class with the same formalism, the so-called Mukai vector of the class, and find exactly the classes of the holomorphic cycles. So what happens with Lagrangian cycles? Well, Lagrangian cycles are a little weird. So what I want to say is that a Lagrangian cycle lambda will be in something like, now I want omega I perp together with, say, omega J perp. So in fact, I have to make a choice of, these are going to be special Lagrangian. I have to make a choice of holomorphic two form, or otherwise put, a choice not just of the complex structure I'm looking at, but of a second Kähler class to impose the special Lagrangian condition on cycles. And if you make different choices, for example, if I choose K, or if I choose some, as that second Kähler class, some linear combination of omega J and omega K, then I'll get something which is special, which is Lagrangian always. That just means in omega I perp. It means omega I restricts identically zero to the class. But it'll be special Lagrangian for a slightly different choice of Kähler metric. So there's this slight ambiguity in identification of cycles in that you've got to be very careful about the choice of cohomology class. But having done this, it can also be extended to the same condition in this larger cohomology ring, and you see this the same kind of conditions which would come into play in defining the appropriate Foucaille category for this guy. So let me mention one situation in which this is under control in a very nice way. And again, I want to focus on the case of K3 surfaces, where a little more is known. So the integral cohomology of a K3 surface is a standard even unimodular lattice of signature 3, 19, and there's some quadratic form theory which tells you that it looks like it has a matrix in which the lattice has 3 hyperbolic planes and then 2 big blocks, and those big blocks are the natural reflection lattice associated with E8. With a sign change, because algebraic geometers and Lie theorists have never agreed on the sign that should be used. Yeah, those are 8x8 blocks, which are the Cartan matrix for E8, with the change in sign. So maybe I should call them minus E8. So what I can do is choose inside here any lattice that I like of signature 1, -1. And I want to choose a primitively embedded lattice. And so then the complement of lambda 1, -1 will be some other lattice, which is, so that has signature 20 minus rho. So there's a natural set of points where I can do these twists in a very natural way, and that is to look at the set of K3s with the property that this lambda 1, -1 sitting inside of H2XZ is type 1-1. So this is complex K3s. That means I've chosen a complex structure as well as a metric. Or in the notation I was just using, what I'm asserting is that lambda 1, -1 should be in lambda I perp. Should be in lambda j perp intersect lambda k perp. So the choice for Kähler class is going to be restricted to this lambda 1-1 space, tensor with R. To make things nice, I'll restrict my choice of B field to live in a similar class so that I can put those two things together. And then the complex structure is determined by this other lattice. So the complex structure is a Hodge structure on the perp. So here's a case where we understand exactly what mirror symmetry does. Mirror symmetry takes this to the set of complex K3s with the property that, well, what I have to do in order to describe mirror symmetry is write this as a direct sum of a 0, 1, 1, 0 lattice plus some other guy, which I'm going to call the dual lattice. So the dual lattice has signature 1, comma, maybe I shouldn't use L for dual. Maybe I'll use M for mirror. 1, comma, 19 minus 0. So these are the complex K3s with lambda 1, comma, 19 minus rho, the mirror one, inside omega j hat intersect omega k hat. So mirror symmetry, I was advertising mirror symmetry as a way of identifying points on the moduli space. When you lift it up to the choice of complex structure, you have to be a little careful about what those identifications mean. And this is a large subset of the moduli space on which you can make a consistent identification of what the mirror transformation means in that case. If you've lifted it up and take an arbitrary complex structure, it may be that there aren't very many classes which have the potential of twisting into interesting brains. You have to be careful about how you choose the complex structure if you want to get some interesting consequences, particularly for these topological versions of mirror symmetry. So this can be topologically twisted, in this case, with no problem whatsoever. And this sort of algebraic form of mirror symmetry was actually anticipated in the mathematics literature long before mirror symmetry was ever discovered. This phenomenon of some kind of relationship between various pairs of moduli spaces of K3 surfaces. Of course, they didn't really understand that the metrics would have a role to play, but this kind of pairing was discovered under the name of Arnold's strange duality. During the study of certain classes of two-dimensional complex singularities which have natural compactifications onto degenerate K3s. And it was kind of realized that when you looked at the deformation space of these particular class of singularities, you got moduli spaces of K3s if you appropriately compactified, and that there was this funny duality among the singularities, and that led to, the duality was explained as this relationship between families of K3s with lattices exactly satisfying this relationship by Dolgachev and Pinkham in around the mid-1970s. Yeah, I did. Okay, so this is a lift. So I describe mirrors as giving isomorphisms between superconformal field theories, sort of identifying the superconformal field theories. Since the data of the superconformal field theory doesn't include the complex structure, you have to be careful how you lift statements like that to include complex structures. And for these families, you can lift to include the complex structures. And that means you can do nice A and B twists, and you also get the topological mirror symmetry for these. You can also relate these guys by a Fourier-Mackay transform and relate the appropriate categories to each other in this case. What else am I supposed to say? Five. SYZ. Yeah, so sorry, Mr. Z, I don't have an SYZ description for these. Yes. Yes. Right. So, that's a good question. There's some work of Mukai, but I can't really think exactly what he did, and nor can I think of the reference off the top of my head. Actually, it's an obscure reference. It's not easy to find this paper, in which he when it's elliptically fibered, he's able to use that to. Arnold's work was about the so-called 14 exceptional unimodular singularities. They're not simple elliptic, but they're elliptic. I think they're elliptic. Yes, that's right. Yeah. Okay, so last time I pointed out the sort of standard observation, which is that if you have a hyperkähler manifold, which is fibered by complex tori, so if I'm in a complex structure omega I, such that Tn is a holomorphic submanifold, then for an appropriate other complex structure, it might be omega j, it might be omega k, it might be a combination. You have to be careful about the labeling. For an appropriate other complex structure, then this Tn actually turns out to be a special Lagrangian submanifold. Holomorphic Lagrangian, thank you. So that means that the holomorphic 2 form restricts to be identically zero on it. And so, the part about the SYZ construction that I don't think anybody has very clearly said is contained in the title of the SYZ paper, which is that mirror symmetry is T-duality. And what one expects is that a standard T-duality transformation in string theory, so what does this T-duality transformation do? T-duality is going to send the torus to some dual torus. And that's not simply an abstract statement. That's supposed to actually be a metric statement. That's supposed to include metrics and B-fields in an appropriate sense. And if one is able to do that fiber by fiber in this fibration, one is supposed to produce the mirror manifold. So X over B, one tries to do the T-duality fiber by fiber and produce a mirror X a priori over the same B. Now, the first problem is that, of course, there will be singular fibers in any such fibration. So the example of K3 surfaces shows that very clearly. And it's really only it really only makes sense at the outset to talk about the restrictions of the torus fibrations to these open subsets where they're non-singular, and that's the place where you're expecting T-duality to exactly work its magic. And the subtle question of whether the completions of those moduli spaces to include the points where there are singular fibers, whether those are the same, that's definitely an open question at this particular moment. But in the hyperkähler case, there's, as I mentioned in the first lecture, there's pretty good reason to expect that those parameter spaces B would also be the same. So the the standard way of checking this in the hyperkähler case has been to use this change of complex structure. So here, X and MX Well, it's not so clear if I'm doing the SYZ construction just as a kind of construction in superconformal field theory that I needed to choose a complex structure to do it. I probably shouldn't need to choose a complex structure to do it. But if I'm able to choose complex structures for which I've got special Lagrangian submanifolds, at least on one side of the story, then I might hope to actually do the work. So if you change the complex structure, so that Tn is inside of X is actually a holomorphic Lagrangian submanifold, then you can hope to at least check that you also have some kind of holomorphic Lagrangian submanifold on a putative mirror for the story, also equipped with an appropriate changed complex structure. Translating this condition that the metrics and B fields from the torus should go over to the mirror is not something something that I thought I understood, but in the last 2 days in preparing this lecture, I've realized I don't understand properly exactly how to keep track of that data when I'm changing the complex structure and thinking about the holomorphic Lagrangian submanifold condition. So the sort of SYZ status, as I understand it, so the SYZ aspect of Langlands duality is a non-compact version of this story, because the moduli spaces in question are non-compact, where we have a hyperkähler manifold, which is this Hitchin moduli space for some group G, and in fact we have two hyperkähler manifolds. For the group G and the Langlands dual group LG, and natural constructions of, in an appropriate complex structure, vibrations to some base space whose fibers are holomorphic Lagrangian tori in one of the complex structures. And the reason for getting such vibrations is pretty clear when you think about what the Hitchin moduli space is parameterizing. One of the things that you'll get somehow will be the topological class of the bundle, algebraic class of the bundle on the Riemann surface C. And that algebraic class of a bundle, when all is said and done, turns into a point on the Jacobian of C of some degree. So you take the appropriate component of the Jacobian. And maybe you have to do, if the group is not GLN, maybe you have to do some tricks to understand what part of a Jacobian or what kind of prim construction you have to make in order to get it. But the fact that you get algebraic tori associated to essentially the top, any line bundle on the curve, the choice of, in this case, would be something like the determinant or something of that sort, that's not a surprise. So the fact that we would get holomorphic tori in a natural way, a vibration by holomorphic tori in a natural way on these spaces is also not surprising. So what Hausl and Thaddeus verified, and Kapustin and Witten later explained from a physics point of view, is that there is a sense in which the fibers of these maps are naturally dual tori and that's true once the discrete B field data is taken into account. So there, well, cases I was discussing, there was no issue of discrete B-field. But in these moduli spaces, the set of possible B-fields can form more than one component. And one can sort of label the components by some basically topological version of the B-field data. And that topological version will affect both sides of the mirror story. So you've got to put in this topological version and get some family of tori with the discrete B-field data included. And you find a natural duality between the fibers of the map. It would be great to have more information about this situation. In particular, it would be great to have a way to translate the information about the metrics and the B fields from the complex structure in which this is special Lagrangian back to information about the holomorphic Lagrangian submanifold and do a sort of more complete verification of this SYZ program in this particular case. They're discrete. I mean, that's correct. So that would be a topological. What do you mean by topologically non-trivial? In H3, right. So, I mean, another complicating factor in this story is that the spaces involved are not compact, and we have to be careful, quite careful, about what we mean by where the cohomology classes live, and what it means, whether it's in homology or cohomology, and whether, and are we taking homology relative to the boundary or not? There, and I don't know that that stuff has been sorted out for these cases. Pardon? Fibers are compact. No, but the B fields, when I talk about discrete B field data, really the B field should have come from the total space. And I mean, the reason that the torus has a B field is not because it's some independent thing you specified about the torus, but it's that there was a B field on the total space, which was now restricted to the torus. So this B field data, which is about the fibers, really should come from some global thing about the choice about the moduli space itself. And that's where we have to worry about which kind of cohomology theory we're doing. As a class on the total space or on the total space? Okay. And which cohomology are you using since it's not compact? I mean, it's That's right. So I should not be giving the end of this talk. Somebody else should be. Yes. Sure. So I have to say that back in the old days, you know, we thought that mirror symmetry was something new. But S, Y, and Z claimed in the title of their paper that mirror symmetry is nothing other than T-duality. And one could have titled the Kapustin-Witten paper "Mirror Symmetry is S-Duality," sort of trumping the SYZ title. S-duality is T-duality.
No.
But we are talking apples and oranges here because it was S-duality of N equal 4 super Yang-Mills in four dimensions. And on the other hand, it's mirror symmetry is a phenomenon about two-dimensional conformal field theories. And it's being realized in terms of T-duality that plays a role in those two-dimensional conformal field theories. And one of the things that Kapustin-Witten did do, I didn't mean to make light of this, is they check that the S-duality action, when dimensionally reduced to this two-dimensional situation they're looking at, is naturally the mirror symmetry correspondence that one would expect. And that's the one that S, Y, and Z explain as coming from T-duality of the fibers of a fibration. So it's not quite acting in the same place. You wouldn't really, you know, form a U-duality in that way. Okay, so this is enough structure to very strongly suggest that, it's enough structure to be able to do the twists, although one has to sort of close one's eyes to the non-compactness of the moduli space in describing the sigma model. But if one closes one's eyes, and by the way, it's not simply that we don't know how to compactify it. These won't, if I understand correctly, won't have hyperkähler compactifications, right? I mean, they're sort of obstructions to that. Pardon? The volume is infinite. But that doesn't stop me in the case of ALE space, of thinking of that ALE space as modeling some neighborhood in some, maybe that could still be true for this case. The volume is infinite, true. So one can form sigma models, closing one's eyes to the non-compactness. One can topologically twist those sigma models, and we're all set up with the complex structures that Anton has explained to us to do those topological twistings. And having done those topological twistings, we can hope or expect that the corresponding D-brane categories will make sense. Again, one is going to have to worry a little bit about formulating them carefully to account for boundary conditions, since the spaces involved are non-compact. But at least one route through that story, the route which leads to the objects of interest in geometric Langlands, has been carried out and has worked quite successfully. So I think I'm going to stop 5 minutes early with those remarks. Greg. Sorry. He's the chair. He's calling on you. Right. That's supposed to be the topological mirror map between categories. It's true. One could ask the question, where are we in the moduli space and what are the stable objects? Of course, I'm not sure that stability in four dimensions is related to stability here. I mean, we are sitting at a particular complex structure, hyperkähler structure on this space, right? And so that should determine which brains in the category are stable for that particular choice. And so you would think, yeah, I agree. You would think that if you could determine which were the stable objects, that they would correspond. I don't know what they would come from in four dimensions. I don't think you can argue on four-dimensional grounds that stable objects have to correspond to stable objects. I think you could argue that some class of things which come from four dimensions have to correspond. But I think this larger question of whether... I mean, this... But, I mean, these spaces have dimension sort of 4G, roughly, right? Maybe 4GR or something. Yeah. And so there's no, I mean, except in the very lowest cases, there's no stringy interpretation for these signal models. Well, I agree. I mean, one could be optimistic and hope that there would be such a correspondence, and it's an interesting question, but I think one needn't expect it to be true.